Hi. So I'm here to present Valence. It's a programming language that borrows from natural language to expand the expressive power of code. Specifically, it addresses two glaring omissions in the existing language landscape, structural ambiguity and homonymy, which together are very, very powerful. And these are things that we take for granted in spoken language. So basically, what I mean by structural ambiguity is sentences like, Billy saw the group with a telescope. So the ambiguity lies in the grammatical construction. When we say this, is Billy peering at the group through a telescope, or did he happen to walk by as the group was doing some stargazing? We can leave this ambiguous in spoken code, in spoken language, but in code, you know, there's some order of operations that'll select one interpretation that's supposedly more correct than the other. But what if we want it to be both ways? And then homonyms, the ability of a single word to have multiple meanings, which is used very powerfully in poetry. I like the example of Yoko Ono's Fly piece, where fly has this accumulation of meanings over time between the physical and the metaphorical, an actual fly in her film. And this is basically a short program for human beings to carry out. When she tells us to fly, it means a whole bunch of different things. So what if we want to make poetic use of these double meanings in code? This is what I aim to solve with the Valence programming language. So naturally, to build a lexicon for this, I decided to use ancient Greek measuring signs. So this is the alphabet that we're working with. It's eight symbols, and each one has a whole bunch of different meanings that I'll get to in a moment. These are the only signs that it recognizes apart from square brackets, which you can use to disambiguate when needed. And so each one of these can be used in different ways, either with no parameters, one parameter, or two parameters. If it has one, then it's a prefix, so the next thing. Or if it has two parameters, then it's infix, so it's what comes before and what comes after. So you can see here's one line of code over there to the right and two different interpretations broken out with the brackets. Except that I lied, there's actually not two, there's four, because each of these symbols is both a variable and it's also a literal value. And of course, it's an octal since there's eight signs. This is entirely accidental. If it had turned out that it would have been, I could have fit all the functionality that I wanted in seven signs, this would have been all in base seven instead. So I'll show you how this breaks down. Oh, well, so in this example here, basically, if when it's a prefix, The first one is the command, the first symbol, and that's an if statement. It's converting it to an integer. That's what the middle sign is doing. And then it's taken as either the variable reading or the integer reading, which the integer reading is just the octal digit. And for the other reading, the middle symbol is the command, and so it's assignment, and it will assign either the octal digit or the dereferencing that is from the variable. So this is all the different signs and their values right now. Commands are in green. There's one command per line. Expressions are in blue. The color before the sign is how it's read, and after are the parameters that it requires. Orange is a variable, yellow is an octal int, and white for type. One of the nice things about this is that you can sort of calculate all of these things so that if it's expecting a type, you can actually have that as an expression that resolves to a number. That number is then converted, it's forced into an integer, and then we go mod 8, and it resolves to one of these signs, and then that is the type that it gets assigned. So in terms of what this looks like in the interpreter, it looks like this. I realize that not everybody has ancient Greek measuring signs on their keyboard. So you can actually type with these taken from the QWERTY keyboard. It's all with the left hand. Or if you want to do it on your phone, you have buttons to the upper right. And this is what it actually looks like to type in what I just shown. As you type, it's sort of generating the different readings. And it'll run the ones that are resolvable. They turn red like that if it opens a block that never closes. And you can hide the non-runnable ones if you don't want to see those, the ones that are not complete. Now, not everyone might like the idea that you need a single, that this line of code with a single symbol only has one resolution. So you can sort of get around that by using jump and go to instead. And, you know, there's some people who just don't like structured programming, and I'm not here to judge. So you can sort of just jump a certain number of lines away, or you can go to a label. And of course, that also can take an expression so that you could dereference a variable and go to the number that is the integer equivalent of whatever the expression resolves to, mod 8. So let's see what this looks like in sort of a go-to situation. Now we have two different versions of the program that end up with different results because they go to different labels. So this is how we sort of create these alternate flows. And I have this QR code, which is a little cut off maybe for the repo, but it's also on the site. So you might not always want a reading as both a literal and a variable. Luckily, we have a sign for dereferencing and one for forcing the literal reading. So you can kind of see both here. And we use this all the time in valence, those two signs. So one of the inspirations for this, of course, is the classic polyglot program, the program that runs in multiple languages. This is sort of like writing a polyglot for one language, where you get different results. Another inspiration is the Conlang UA. It was created by Sonia Lang, better known for her work creating the Toki-Pona language. But I really believe that UA is her masterpiece. It's a language written with all vowels, where every word is a homonym. So you can have a whole conversation with someone else and not realize that the two of you are talking about completely different things. So I love you is said the same way as I flatten myself. So like UA, it's valence is a language of chance associations. And it's also often a language of accidental algorithms. Here's how the type system works. If you divide 2 by 4, as we'll see, you get 1. This is because every operation resolves to the type of its left parameter. In this case, it's the integer 2. Now, dividing 2 by 4 and getting 1, that's pretty good. But if you want to be, if you're really like a stickler for detail, we can force 2 into a ratio, and then you get 1/2. So I know that went a little bit fast, but we ended up with 1/2 down here. I'm not sure how well people can see this. But basically, sort of at the bottom of this, it gives you what the state is of all the variables. There's always 8 variables. They start off numbered 0 to 7, and then that first one became 1 at the end. So this whole thing about forcing values. So here's an example of sort of a more complex line of code, and you can see how some of the interpretations look a little strange. What does it mean to say, for example, like a 6 minus 0 equals 1 minus 7? This is actually an assignment. The left side of this resolved to 6, and then that translates to the 6 variable. And this is how we dereference things, how this works. If we do this, we're assigning over and over again to this number, which we write with a D. But then we do the dereference thing, and now what D holds, which is 6, is the one that we type with a Z, and it gets assigned to that instead. This is the way we can sort of use these things in concert to create kind of a delightful ambiguity. Now, one of the great joys of valence is that you don't need to start a program with a particular purpose in mind. You can just sort of key mash with your left hand and see what comes out. And then maybe you'll lock it down with brackets if you want. Here I'm creating something that creates like 400 interpretations, and then we can run them all, and they will all run depending on how fast your browser is. You'll notice that there's a few programs that are doing similar things. Oh, there's a few that have some undefineds I saw there. This project still has some things that I'm still developing in the interpreter, mostly support for queues, which is not 100%. So basically, if you're going to use this language to write your production code for banking software or whatever, you probably need to wait like a couple months, and then we should be there. This is my major sort of to-do list. The interpreter is 80% done. And I'm thinking of adding sort of a trade operation where two signs can trade a subset of their interpretations within that program so that you can kind of create like more meaningful ambiguity where you want. This has gone through many iterations, this project already. The first version of this had a grammar that led to a single line of code that would you know, have like 10,000 interpretations. So I had to sort of really lock it down and be much more precise with the way that I created this. At this point, the grammar is complete, and it's mostly sort of interpreter things that I'm working on. And we still have a few minutes left. I should mention, well, my editor would be upset if I did not mention that I do have a book coming out in the fall, which has this language and 43 other programming languages of mine, to be called 44 SLangs, The Art of Esoteric Code. The QR code to the left is my mailing list, and the one to the right is for the book itself. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Are you planning to write a web framework with this?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, if no one else does it before me, then I mean the thing is that when you create a programming language, you never know how other people are going to use it. Someone's already written a web server in Brainfuck, right? So that's totally possible.
A popular view in language research is that ambiguity exists, but is solved in interaction, in clarification, etc. Do you have like a type of, because you have multiple interpretation, but do you have some form of clarification to be understood and to really understand what the language is saying?
Yes. Well, so any programming language, it'll have formal rules around how these things combine. So, for instance, you can't do things like open two blocks and then close it once and have a version where each one of them opens like an if statement and a while statement with then one closing block. That's not gonna work. So the grammar, kind of defines that's not really valid. But in terms of the other combinations, I sort of expect that for most people, the easiest way to do this is to sort of mess with it until they sort of find different results and sort of discover all the sort of hidden things about the language. But of course, it will be like fully defined. So if people want to see those rules, they are all spelled out. And basically what I'm showing here in the browser, this version of the interpreter, this is all in the GitHub repo right now. If people do want to try it.
Is this on? Are you thinking of implementing the come from statement as well?
Oh, well, I am a big fan of come from. It is very tempting. So come from, it's one of the features of InterCal, but not the original 1970s InterCal. I think it was the 1990 one by ESR when he revived InterCal. So for people who don't know, come from is the opposite of go to. So you put it where you want to end up, and it says what line you should jump to from there.
Do we have any more questions for the speaker? Do you have anything else to talk about?
No, that's pretty much it. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, well, thank you, Daniel.